City Council meeting to order. And we just returned from a closed session. I'll ask our city attorney if there's anything to report.
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. We'll begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Brian Sturdivant. Thank you. Next, roll call, please.
This evening, Councilmember Barbeau is absent. Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
Four present.
Thank you. First item is the approval of the agenda.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We have no presentations this evening. We do have a consent calendar made up of items considered to be routine in nature that could be passed by one motion unless any member of the public would like to pull an item for further discussion or if a council member would like to pull an item for further discussion. With that in mind, any council members?
No.
Any member of the public wishing to pull a consent calendar item for further discussion? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion on the consent calendar.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Next is updates from our city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So the first thing I want to talk about is our annual wine festival, so which includes the mayor's winemaker dinner, the wine festival, and lots of other events. The Lakeside Wine Festival, presented by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, was held this last weekend, and reports indicate it was an even bigger and better success than usual. The Kiwanis Winemaker Dinner, held at the Pavilion on the Lake on Friday evening, featured a wonderful gourmet dinner, 32 winemakers, plus silent and live auctions. Proceeds from the dinner and the auction were to help support Lighthouse and a number of other projects around town. It was a very successful evening with a lot of very generous donors. New this year to the festival were several special features, including a wine-up with yoga on Saturday morning and a VIP experience, which allowed visitors early entry and VIP treatment. The festival Saturday evening include wine tasting with many of our best Central Coast winery, lots of great art, and food vendors, plus complimentary Charles Paddock Zoo admission. And according to our gate count, the number of visitors to the zoo during the wine festival was up by over 500 visitors from last year. So it was a beautiful evening. The weather cooled just in time for the wine festival, and it worked out to be another wonderful event put on by the Chamber of Commerce. We have a lot of summertime events coming up. So Saturdays in the Park Summer Concert Series at the Atascadero Lake Bandstand. All concerts are held from 6:30 to 8:30, and they are completely free to the public. There's a number of bands, a different band each week, each Saturday. If you look around town, the Saturday in the Park posters are all over, and they'll tell you who's playing when. We have Tuesday evening barbecue in the park at the Atascadero Lake Park. The barbecue is served from 5 to 7 p.m., and the Atascadero Community Band will perform each week from 7 to 8 p.m. Information and tickets are available from the Chamber of Commerce. And don't forget those Tuesday night barbecues in the park support a different nonprofit every week and part of major fundraisers for a lot of nonprofits here in town. And we have the market, Farmers Market and Chef Summer Sizzle. That's each Wednesday from 3 to 6 p.m. through August 8th. The Atascadero Farmers Market will showcase a local chef who will feature a special recipe that will include farmer fresh items that can be purchased at the market. Every summer sizzle will include local live music, so it's a terrific opportunity to get out and enjoy the market, as well as the entertainment in the Sunken Gardens. I have to admit, I have been enjoying that, listening to it from my office, and have been able to sneak out and had some asparagus wrapped in bacon last week the chef was giving away. Absolutely incredible. So on Wednesday, July 4th, Farmers Market and the Summer Sizzle will be held as usual in the Sunken Garden, so you can still get your fresh fruit for your 4th of July barbecue that day. And then our supersized Downtown Sizzle will be held on Wednesday, July 11th. All of the vendors from the Farmers Market will be spread throughout the downtown area. There'll be lots of live music, food, and entertainment to enjoy, along with a lot of our regular shops, restaurants, and other vendors, business owners in the downtown will be participating as well. So I know this is something that a lot of children in the area have been looking forward to as they've been watching the playground be built behind the fence. I see a lot of people peeking through the fence to kind of see. So we will, it should be done next Monday. So we will have a ribbon cutting event for the new playground on Tuesday, July 3rd at 5:30 p.m. This is something that we just added. We'd love to have as much of the community come out, particularly the kids. The playground will be roped off and fenced off until then, but we will be opening all of that on Tuesday, July 3rd at 5:30, and everybody can go play on it right after that. It'll be just in time for the 4th of July festivities. So we are very excited. This has been a long time in coming, and it looks like a lot of fun. And speaking of the 4th of July, we are going to have the second annual Bluegrass Freedom Festival from 4 to 8:30 at Atascadero Lake Park. The event will include live bluegrass music, family amusements, a beer and wine vendor garden, boat, kayak, and paddleboard rentals, a barbecue dinner, and community games. Our brand new playground will be open just in time for the event. For information, visit atascadero4thofjuly.com. And the event is presented by and benefits the Atascadero Colony Days Committee. Again, that's 4 to 8:30 at the Atascadero Lake Park, the annual Bluegrass Freedom Festival. Ice Cream Zufari will be held on Saturday, July 14th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. We invite everyone to come cool down with an ice cream filled evening at the zoo. The event is always very relaxing and enjoyable for the whole family with great music, activities, and a wide variety of all-you-can-eat ice cream treats that everyone loves. This year, Ice Cream Zufari includes selection from Doc Bernstein's Ice Cream Lab, Yogurt Creations, and A&W Root Beer. Your entry ticket includes admission to the zoo along with all-you-can-eat ice cream, and they do mean all-you-can-eat. There'll be ice cream and sundaes with all the toppings. You can stroll through the zoo and enjoy visiting with the animals while trying out the cool treats. Ice Cream Zufari is presented again this year by Pure Pediatric Dentistry, with our thanks. So that's a they always are a great sponsor and enjoy sponsoring that event, probably tongue-in-cheek. There's usually 5 to 7 to 10 different ice cream stations, with each ice cream station having one or two different types of ice cream. You can go from ice cream place to ice cream stop and enjoy the evening. And while we're talking about the zoo, wanted to talk about the Red Panda exhibit. We're very excited about this terrific new exhibit that will soon be open to the Charles Paddock Zoo. The construction and preparation are in their final stages, and zoo staff have been very busy getting everything ready to go. We are anticipating that we'll be able to open the exhibit to the public in mid-August. We had a little bit of difficulties with the airlines in getting our red pandas out to the Charles Paddock Zoo. Some of the airlines have changed their policies and the ability of animals to fly on their airlines, but we finally got that straightened out, and I'm happy to announce that not only our red pandas, but our muntjac deer and our Asian birds are all here at the Charles Paddock Zoo. They're going through their mandatory quarantine period as we put the finishing touches on the exhibit, and everybody will be here, and the exhibit will be open. We want to thank again the generosity of Thelma Vetter Trust and Thelma Vetter for building this exhibit for us. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions from the council.
Any council questions? I will add a little bit about the Mayor's Kiwanis Winemaker Dinner, as this was a record year. This has gone on for 8 years. There was one time I started it out with just the city as a fundraiser, and then Kiwanis took that over and grew it into even a bigger fundraising event, now called the Mayor's Kiwanis Winemaker Dinner. They netted $86,000 this year. They made a commitment to Lighthouse that everything raised on the initial paddle sponsor would go to Lighthouse, and that was over $31,700. The board will be meeting to look at additional funds for some other organizations. But I did want to ask Councilwoman Moreno to tell us a little bit about Lighthouse. You'll see why we did select. It was a very good presentation by the organization at the winemaker dinner. It was truly a tearjerker. And you know, I was very impressed when you look at the stats of substance abuse, deaths related to substance abuse, how it's on a terrible increase nationwide, but within our own city, it's actually been a reduction. And we do attribute that to the efforts in our community, not only with our police department, but with Lighthouse. So, Heather, since you serve on the committee of this organization, could you tell us a little bit more about Lighthouse?
Sure. So Lighthouse is part of the Atascadero Greyhound Foundation, and they are really about the education, awareness, prevention, and intervention when it comes to drug use amongst our youth. And they do a lot of different programs. They have counseling at the high school. They do Lighthouse Coffee, which they partner with Joe Bella Coffee Roasters, and the youth learn how to run a business. They do a reality tour, so parents and their children get an idea of what are the drugs that are out there. How do you talk to your kids? And they actually do a mock overdose, and it's pretty moving. You can't I don't think you can come out of there without some tears. This program specifically that they were raising funds for through the Friday night dinner is for the LAMP program, which is the Lighthouse Atascadero Mentoring Program, where sixth graders are being mentored by older students. And this is the first year of completing it, and it's really, I think, going to end up being a model for the nation. And so exciting to see that the community was so incredibly generous, as the community, as this community always is, and Friday night for Lighthouse was pretty special. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. And thank you for those updates from the city manager. The next item on our agenda is the community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on any topic under the city council's jurisdiction, but it's a topic that's not on the agenda tonight, because we'll have a public comment portion for each agenda item. So if you have something you would like to tell us, this would be your time. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm here to talk about the skate park. This is not from the skate park, I'll have you know.
Okay.
I very much appreciate what the city's done with a lot of the events that have been spoken about, and especially the skate park. I have three children. We've raised our kids in this community, and it's been a huge benefit to us. There is some concerns arising with it that I think should be considered among this group. It's essentially been taken over by a private corporation, the Paradise Coalition, Inc., which also has other corporations involved now, including Liberty Scooters, SCT Scooter Hardware, and A-Town Park, which is actually a for-profit retail store. It's also no longer has any free hours. So what's happening is, I have the lease here in section 3.1 under the terms of use. It says, tenants shall provide free public access and use the facility during the days and times approved by the city tenant. Tenant may apply fees at other times for use of this facility for skating activities and events held at that premises, but not conflicting with free public hours. Since the building, we used to have free public hours when it was very hot because the building was not insulated. But since the building got insulated and is usable more hours, free public hours have shrunk. The only free public hours this year will be during the school year from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, which if you have children in school, that's no longer free. And during the summer hours, there's no free hours. It's $5 a day. Even skate parks that do charge, such as Los Osos, is only $2. Other skate parks, city skate parks that have been taken by corporation like the Volcom Skate Park and the Van Skate Park in LA and Orange County are free. So this is the nature of the for-profit atmosphere there. There is one way to get into this skate park free, and that is to be a team rider of one of these companies I've mentioned. That means if you use and buy their products, you can enter free. If you do not, you must pay. I won't belabor the point, but I think we all see that it's gone outside of the lease clearly, as I read it, that's one point. Even some simple things. Tenants shall maintain the George C. Beattie Skate Park name for the facility. That just hasn't happened. The sign's still up, but there's a competing sign, A-Town Park, which is a retail store. And even on the city's website, there's an A-Town Park logo with a short, small parentheses, George C. Beattie. The city pays insurance, pays utilities, even pays alarm service. The park was donated by skateboarders and people that wanted it for the community. I think we need to tune this up. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Well, could you state your name for the record?
Yes, I'm sorry. My name's David Nichols. I'm the owner of Bolt Motorcycle Hardware. I'm here in Atascadero. And if the lease is $1 a year, we would be happy to bid on a lease for that facility. It's a huge asset.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Paul Murphy, Friends of Atascadero Lake. If you haven't been over to the lake recently, algae has become a real problem again this year. In past years, we had a bunch of old geezers out there farming the algae and getting it out of the way. We're under the impression that starting this year we might have a better solution, some kind of chemical treatment. It's too late. Can't do that now. I guess the paperwork really wasn't done in time. So I have some solutions that I'm going to propose. Let's start working right now on a plan for next year, so that before the algae becomes a problem, we can deal with it either chemically or mechanically or some other method that the city wants to come up with. Can't wait until the lake's covered with algae to come out and put poison on it. That'll just create a worse situation and creates a lot of crap on the bottom of the lake. Mechanical harvesting at this point is really the only decent solution. There are devices out there. They're generally human-driven. They're not terribly sophisticated, and they're definitely not terribly expensive. But there are ways of getting the algae out of the lake, and that's really the best thing that we could do. If we get the algae out of the lake, it doesn't decompose and redeposit phosphate and nitrate for next year's algae bloom. We've had years and years and years of stuff accumulating in the lake, and the bottom line is if we can reduce the phosphate and nitrate loading, we can reduce the frequency and severity of the algae blooms just like that. And then if we have a decent method to control it when it occurs, we have a beautiful lake. It's not quite that beautiful now. So I guess what I'm here to ask is the city ready, willing, and able to address the algae issue? Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Nancy Hare with Friends of Atascadero Lake. I just want to read to you something that's in your budget under the Parkland Facilities Fee Fund that was written as a description of what this fund is all about. It says, the provision of a well-planned park system with a variance in the size and nature of facilities offered is an important amenity to the residents of the city. Future residential development by increasing the city's population will necessarily impact the city's park system. Without future parkland and continued development of currently owned but underutilized parkland, the city parks will become overcrowded and overused, with the ultimate result becoming a negative experience for park users. That's great, because, and I agree with that 100%. So Atascadero Lake, I believe, is under this Parkland Facilities Fee Fund, because I see that you have the Atascadero Pipeline repair here that happened. You budgeted quite a bit of money for 2016 and 17, 2017, 18. I don't know what you've used from that. But, and it seems to me in your budget, you have a big balance in your Parkland Facilities Fee Fund. And what I'm asking you is to consider using some of the money to address the algae issue in the lake, because we all know that the lake is the jewel of Atascadero. We know there's been an increase in park use and everything at the lake, visitors and whatnot. I talked to Rob, who runs the pedal boat concession. He says he's probably not going to be able to run his boats for much longer because of the algae in the lake. The pedals, you know, get all caught up in it and everything. So I'm just asking you to please consider taking some money from somewhere and addressing this issue. There's no line item in your budget for Atascadero Lake specifically moving forward, and I think that is an important part of the city of Atascadero. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, City Council members. My name's Michelle Harms. I'm a recent resident of Atascadero. I moved from Las Vegas. I love my new home. And one thing that interests me about Atascadero is that there was this beautiful lake in the middle of a neighborhood that I could bring my kids to and enjoy. I'm also a limnologist, so I have an innate interest in what goes on microscopically in the water. I'm a little out of it, so I can't profess my expertise, but I do know a little bit about the systems that have occurred, and I've noticed the algae bloom. And as much as I'm willing to go out there and drag the algae out myself, I thought I'd look pretty silly doing it. So I wanted to find out what there could be in the community that can help pull everyone together to take care of the algae. I know that Paul mentioned that we can physically remove it, and that is a really good option. Chemically, when that stuff starts to break down, it's going to make a nice environment for cyanobacteria. That's toxic. It will release all of the things that the algae is holding right now, which is a lot of pollutants. Probably due to fertilizer and agriculture, things that are in our community that we can maybe in the future prevent from getting in there. But now that it's in there, that algae is holding it. So removing it is really a great option. I've done some research because I know things change every year. And part of an option would be an entrepreneur coming in and using that algae as fertilizer. I'm not sure if it's good for wineries, but maybe it's something to look into. It can also be rolled fairly easy using some very simple modified equipment off the shelf into tubes that could be used for fuel for fires. So I don't know if there's a business opportunity there, but I'm really into creative solutions that kind of use everyone's talents. I don't know if the city has contacts and works regularly with the different divisions that are in charge of the lake. I know probably Fish and Wildlife and other jurisdictions are over the lake, but I would imagine that they too have an interest in getting the algae physically out, because it could cause depleted oxygen supplies, fish dying off, and of course we don't want that. So aside from me being out, going out physically removing the algae, I don't know if the city has access or the availability of boats that you would be able to allow yourselves to use, because I know there's no motorized boats out there, but some modified rakes on ropes and some pumps to pump the algae into a specific area might be a solution that seems less complicated than trying to do it with chemicals since it's already there. Now, I'm also on board with trying to help figure out a way of preventing it. I live near the lake. I'm willing to go out and monitor it if that's what you need. I can take water samples. I'm handy with a microscope. I'll probably need somebody to show me the ropes on new things that have happened in biology in the last 15 years, but I'm willing to help. So I wanted to offer my help and also ask if you could help. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Council staff, Jim Wilkins, president of the Atascadero Historical Society. As Rochelle mentioned, the Tuesday in the Park, we're doing it with the Veterans Memorial Foundation on the 3rd of July. So if you want to start a long midweek party, come on out. We're going to be doing it over there, so get your tickets and help both of us. Another note is we're finally going to be moving a large object through town on July 10th. So we finally got the permit from Caltrans. We have the proper permits from the city to move what's called the Rordoff House. We refer to it as the Madonna House. And as soon as it gets up to the archival center up here, it's going to be the Thelma Vetter Archival House. So the name is going to be switching once we get it up there. And it's already, it's up on axles. We've had to trim its ears back a little bit because it's a pretty wide house. And the foundation's poured. We have the footings dug for the cabin and the rebar's in. And we're hoping to pour it in the next couple weeks. So come out on the 3rd of July and then extend it to the 10th of July and have a little mini parade. We're going to have to start colony days early. We're going to be moving one of the colony homes down El Camino. It's a 3-mile trek. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
I'm Barbara Combs, 9005 Lakeview Drive, and lived on the lake for about 30 years. I've witnessed in 92 the helicopters coming in and basically saving our city. And with the current algae situation, I almost see a danger to the helicopters because that algae is so strong. If a big canvas bucket came down, I think the helicopter might end up in the lake because of the just connective issues that happen with the type of algae we have. But I'm a graduate from Cal Poly in landscape design. I think we need to get someone's fun senior project is to monitor this. If you watch the YouTubes, how fun it is to kind of, you know, get the first algae coming into shore and then, you know, using pumps and different technology. It honestly looks fun to me. So I would like to see Cal Poly. I would like to see the prisoners to come back and to begin shore. We always had, I'd say for at least 20 years, at least twice a year, four prisoners working together. We have a volunteer, Shane Mumford, that works with the prisoners, you know, on fire crews. He's over and over going, why aren't we back working on the shoreline? You pay them $1 an hour, I think we can afford it. And I think we need to be proactive in having the prisoners, the great men's colony crew come in that work on fire crews and, you know, just schedule preventative maintenance. Because the water, we've got the water in the lake that's so phenomenal. So we're getting close to it. So I would... Really, there's just so much. I'm in the health movement, and my dad lives on the Canadian border with all that kelp washing up. My dad's 99, still owns 3 homes, 2 gardens, immaculately kept. But the secret of aging is don't go into fear, and that's with the city council and everything. Don't go into fear no matter what happens. But anyway, I told him, I go, Dad, if you need to earn some extra bucks, just take that kelp that's washing in on your, you know, ocean or your shore property, just blend it up in the blender, dehydrate, and I'm telling you, there's such a business. We have that right now, potential with this special algae that we have. It's probably a huge health benefit. And I've shared before, my Rottweiler lived to 15 and only drank lake water. It was a huge Rottweiler. And if you've looked at the water composition of the lake, it's full of shale, minerals, calcium. It's actually a healing body of water. So somehow we need to scoop up this stuff and be selling it like E.G. Lewis did. You know, this is a health community. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to speak on any item not on the agenda under our jurisdiction? Seeing no one come forward, we'll close the community forum portion, bring it back. I know staff has certainly worked on both of these topics, the skate park and the lake, for some time. I, too, could tell a few stories, having been born and raised in Atascadero, and I remember the days with my Boy Scout leader, Charles Paddock, starting the zoo with volunteer help. They don't let a lot of us volunteers in the zoo anymore because it's so technical being an accredited zoo, and I think also with the efforts on the lake cleanup. We've certainly used to do that a lot with volunteer efforts, and over time, we've seen now 5 agencies involved with that. I served a governor appointee to the Region Water Quality Control Board for a while, and I quickly learned how complicated everything is. I often tell folks the answer to the question you have for me is, sorry, you live in California. And I think this is one of those challenges we have. It's certainly something this council really does support, is serving and improving our Lake Park Zoo Veterans Memorial, really a place of gathering for our community. But I do know that even with the investments, I don't know, what was it, $500,000 spent on dredging the lake this last time, not too many years ago. Certainly some good community efforts, adding water through wells to help with aeration, the aeration systems that the lake, Friends of the Lake has assisted with has certainly helped improved over time. And I know our city engineer is just chomping at the bit to say, well, here's what we can do and here's what we can't do. And what do you, what can you tell us to answer some of these questions, and what might we be able to do in the future?
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. And I share the residents' concerns too. I mean, I want a nice lake free of algae. And currently, we have been working towards a management plan for the algae. That's a 4-stage plan. We're at the end of the first stage, which is this aquatic pesticide application plan. And it requires, this will allow us to treat the algae prior to it growing. So during winter months, we'll be able to chemically treat it to prevent it from forming in the first place. So that'll be a big thing. And that might also come with, you know, perhaps adding some dyes to prevent water or the light getting to the bottom of the lake, which often will start the algae as well. The next phase, and this requires actually a permit from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, so it's a 30-day notice, and we will have that in place for next year. So Mr. Murphy had mentioned, you know, having a plan now for next year. Right, and so we'll start the next process to the next phase, which will be monitoring, and it's kind of more preventative. So trying to keep those pollutants out of the water stream in the first place, and then if they do get in the lake, treating them so they don't form algae. But then there's the other, like right now, what do you do with the algae? Mr. Lynch, I know I saw him a lot out there last year a lot of the time, with a rake with his grandson, I believe, like pulling a lot of the algae out. And so we'll look at perhaps maybe the CCC or the prisoners, seeing if they can maybe help us out, you know, look into, you know, if there's a mechanical means and method to do it. I know back where I'm from, one of the intrusive weeds is Eurasian milfoil, and they had these like dredging pieces of equipment they used to use. The Parkland Facilities Fee Fund, that's kind of for improvements to the parks, for purchasing properties, things of that nature. Actually, the lake maintenance and those funds are coming out of the park maintenance fund. So, you know, I think the lake probably, I'll defer that to the finance director or the city manager if the lake is qualifies for the Parkland facilities fees. I think the balance right now is quite large because we are about $500,000 will be spent in the upcoming near future on the Joy Playground. So that will, you know, eventually get dwindled down a little bit more. You know, I've talked to Mr. Murphy. I've actually talked to Ms. Harms and welcome her to the community. And I think these are opportunities that the city can still continue to partner with Friends of the Lake and other concerned residents to kind of really address it. Right now, I think the main thing is they've all alluded to is trying to get it off the lake in the first place and doing something with it. So we'll check with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, with the prisoners, with the CCC crews, and see if there's anything we can kind of get some help to get out there and remove it. And maybe the city manager wants to add anything, or nope. Okay.
Thank you, and I do like to see us being proactive and try to get into a routine plan. And I do know it's been challenging as the Regional Water Quality Control Board is taking on a number of major projects related to our city. So unfortunately, the lake is probably a lower priority to them, and that we are fighting some very serious issues for our community with the Water Board and are spending a lot of time with them. I do say, as important as the ambiance of the lake is, I always remind everyone that safety really is number one for us in a community. And I speak to this as a young kid watching my dad as one of the first firemen in the Atascadero Fire Department out there rescuing folks from the lake. We had a number of folks die in our lake when we allowed swimming, and all of that gunky stuff under the water that doesn't have very good visibility is a challenge, and I know we don't want to have any more of those calls for service out there either. And so we're very conscious of asking folks to do anything on the city's behalf. We have to take some responsibility and make sure everyone is safe in doing any work as well. So with all of that in mind, it looks like we're going to be as proactive as we can in the future, maybe do a little better at trying to get that ahead of time, and you've got a few more things you can do this year. So appreciate staff working on that. I think you know it's a council priority to do what we can. The other topic that we brought up at community forum was skate park, and some of that was news to me. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or is that something that needs to be reported back on at the future meeting?
You know what? I'd like to get with the current operator of the A-Town Skate Park along with our recreation staff, and then I can report back to council and let you know what's going on and look into this and see if there's a way we can expand some of the free hours again and get some of those other opportunities that Mr. Nichols is that the right name? Was asking for. So we will get back to you on that.
That's good. And Mr. Nichols, you might make sure you have your contact information to the city manager. And I think there's some other council members may have a comment, but I do think the assumption was there would be more access. Did council members have any thoughts on any of this? Councilman Moreno.
Like, certainly interested to hear about back about the skate park. With regards to the parkland fees, I know you kind of touched on it, Nick, but maybe if Rochelle or maybe Cindy, if you want to explain, Ms. Harrod asked about the parkland fees, and so to kind of understand how that works, the funds are what they're restricted and must be used for, what they could not be used for, would be helpful.
So the park impact fees are probably our most complicated impact fee on what they can be used for and what they cannot be used for. In general, impact fees must be spent on new or expanded services. So certainly maintenance of the park or mechanical cleaning of the park would not qualify for use of those funds. If you are expanding the width of various pipes, if you are buying new park land, if you are replacement of our park equipment kind of gets there, but building a new park equipment does count. So there's a lot of very legal restrictions. Any kind of maintenance, though, is not an eligible activity. So there is some of that. We have been looking for other funds. I think Nick kind of skipped over task one a little bit. Task one was actually hiring the environmental firm that has been getting ready to prepare the very thick report that, as the mayor said, sorry you live in California, has to go to Regional Water Quality Control before we can even get the permit. Even things like mechanical cleaning, certainly they don't like any kind of mechanics, depending on if it's gas-powered or electric or all of those, we have to get permits. So we've been spending the last year getting that report done so that we could apply for the permit, which we've now done. Now we're in the waiting period for the permit, but we're going to continue to keep working on that algae.
I mean, if someone was to literally be raking it out of the lake, that's not considered, you know, something that we're not able to do. I mean, that was sort of a double negative I just gave you?
I think so. I'll just say it's a double negative. And yeah.
But is that something where, you know, if somebody happened to be
I
out there raking
up? I think last year it was determined that was, we didn't necessarily ask permission. How's that?
Right. We didn't have a permit to do that, and I'm not sure if right at this point to answer your question accurately if we need a permit or not. If a resident goes out there and removes algae from the lake, and you know they're not really acting on behalf of the city, but you know it's something that we want to monitor, and you know obviously lake water quality is a high priority for us,
right.
And that's one of the things I'm going to check into and talk to some of the Friends of the Lake about.
Okay, thank you.
And I do point out, though, as you said, the city can't ask anyone to do a volunteer service. It gets to be a little technical with Regional Water Quality Control Board. And I would remind folks there have been times in past where well-meaning community members did do some proactive steps. They learned a little bit of the power the water board has in terms of fines, fees, jail sentences potentially. And basically the water board holds our city responsible for being an intermediary. And if they decide we are not able to manage our community well, they may step in. And that's where we are trying to demonstrate that, for example, we can manage those 5,400 septic systems in our community and our wastewater treatment plant and our water supply and yes, the lake too. However, if the water board who monitors meetings such as this and the discussions that occur and very closely checks up on everyone, how well are we doing at monitoring and managing resources, it does have an impact. So we do try to follow all of the rules and be successful in basically working with such institutions that really have a lot of power over deciding the future of those kind of resources. So it's a challenge. So I appreciate our city engineering staff keeping on top of that the best you can. But we are anxious to make some headway. Thank you. Anything else? I do know Councilwoman Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie also had some comments or questions.
I did. Thank you. I'd like to comment first on the skate park. This was all news to me. I did not know that. I appreciate you coming and letting us know. If they're paying $1 a year and then they're charging $5 a day, there's something wrong here in my mind. I'm not happy with the thought that kids are only allowed in during the school year between 2 and 3 when school is not even out. We have to look into this one. So I would appreciate it if we could go down that and see if they're meeting the terms of their lease and doing what they need to be doing. But this wasn't intended to be a commercial operation. This was intended to be a service for the kids to bring in whatever they have to use in that skate park, not to have to use the company's brand to get in. In terms of the Friends of the Lake, I appreciate you so much for what you do. You really are on it. And Barbara, I know you're there at the corner and you do a lot too and keep your eye on things. I know that there are things that we can't do because of regional water quality this year, but I would urge staff to look ahead, as Mr. Murphy said, and plan for this event to happen next year and be ready for it. One of the things that comes to mind are there are many homes that are at one end of the lake down by the bridge, and all the water comes off. It runs off from that end into the lake. If they're putting Miracle-Gro on their vegetables and then watering it and it flows down into the lake, that Miracle-Gro is going to make our algae grow too. So it may be something we need to do some education and so forth for those that live down at that part of it. Thank you.
Other council comments? Very good, thank you. So again, thank you. That's why we have community forum. We get to hear directly. Sometimes we hear some new things, and we want to follow up on all of the things we heard tonight. We'll go forward now with a concluding community forum and move into our public hearings. The first item is item B1, placement of sewer service charges on the 2018-2019 property tax rolls. And we'll begin first, let's go ahead with staff report, and then we'll come back and go through ex parte communications on the part of council. So I will, looks like a Public Works is taking the lead.
Mr. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. This is our annual event for placing the sewer charges on the tax rolls. One of the things why we do this, and I'm not sure why this is acting funny like this, but one of the reasons we do this is we don't operate the water system, so we don't bill based on water consumption. So we have to come up with a system that we fairly distribute over the cost for this. The purpose of the meeting is to really receive objections to the placement of the charges, not what the charge is. There's no proposed increase in the sewer rate this year. We've been working on that fee study. We had to kind of take a step back. We don't want to bring it ahead half-baked, if you will, or without the right, substantiating evidence and facts behind it. So this will be coming later this year. Right now, we're anticipating having that wrapped up at the end of the year. So next year, we'll have a new system. Charges for this year are it's just under $2 million. It's an increase of $24,000 from last year. This is primarily due to about 115 new sewer connections to our system. And the deadline to submit this to the county is July 16th. And again, I'm not sure why this is doing what it is, but oops. So just a little discussion. Monthly rate, $20.18 per equivalent dwelling unit. One dwelling unit is 240 gallons per day. An example, single family home pays approximately $244 a year. And I'm happy to report, as I'm sure the mayor will allude to, that we have some of the lowest rates in the county. Currently, you can see San Luis Obispo is at the top. These are a couple years old, but it's still very relevant to right now. You see a lot of these other utilities have all been proposing increases. I don't think it's any surprise after over 20 years of not having a increase in sewer rates that the fee study will, be recommending increasing those rates. But nonetheless, we are still very, very competitive and very, very low compared to all our neighbors. Santa Maria, for whatever reason, is even cheaper than us. So anyways, a recommendation tonight is to adopt the draft resolution so we can collect sewer charges from those connected to the city sewer, and I'll take any questions you have.
Council questions. Go ahead.
I understand the state has recently passed a water conservation measure which will give each person that lives in a home 55 gallons per day. How will this affect our sewer system if there's less water, obviously less sewage going into the plant, and how will that affect the rates?
So we've kind of, if council remembers when we had the sewer master plans, when we gave the update last year, one of the things with all these low flush toilets and low water consumption is we've had kind of a leveling out of flow to the plant, but the strength of the wastewater has gone way up. So that poses some challenges with the treatment process that we use to make sure that we have that meet the state mandates for what the pollutants can be when we discharge that back into the ground. So I would expect that it will be kind of a similar trend where the strength of the wastewater will increase.
So does it cost more to treat it then?
It can. It depends, you know, on the process. For our process that we currently have, it does slightly increase, but it's not noticeable because a lot of the higher strength wastewater just requires more detention, and you know there might be more sludge that we have to scrape off the bottom and everything else.
Well, when you say equivalent housing unit, so it's based on the number of gallons, or really it's based on the address or the APN?
Correct.
So it's not going to change it if you have fewer gallons per household?
No, this is a flat rate. We don't monitor how much residents or customers are discharging to our system. We have no way to do that. So we just have a flat rate that we use.
Does it work the same for apartments?
Yeah, apartments, you know, a lot of apartments, like if you have a 10-unit apartment, there might just be one connection to that building. So, you know, there's a different calculation for that. So each apartment is probably, I don't know offhand, but it's something less than one EDU. It's probably like 0.7. So if there's 10 of them, that 10 times 0.7 is 7 EDUs, so they pay 7 times the amount of a single-family home.
Other council questions? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a guess, comparing to Santa Maria, they're a relatively flat area, and so that's going to be less pumping charges. One thing unique to Atascadero, in fact, I think we have the most septic systems in the state of California for a per capita size of a city, 5,400. That's a pretty good percentage of our residents that aren't connected to the sewer system. And those that are in the more remote areas into the sewer system have got pumping stations, and you got to go over hill and dale. That does add to costs, especially when you are reducing water mix in. It's, you know, a little more complicated pumping sludge than more liquefied. And if we have changes with issues with Water Quality Control Board and we are have fewer septic systems in the future and require more hookups, that could greatly affect the cost for additional residents. May not affect current residents, but it could be some additional costs. So those are some of the things you've got to factor in the future. And I know our engineering department is very much tuned into this and being as efficient and effective as we can be. But it is somewhat amazing. I do like bragging as mayor, lowest cost water in the county, lowest cost wastewater treatment in the county. It does make a difference. And I think it's been good management by the water company and good management by your staff at the wastewater treatment plant. So thank you for that. Let's go to ex parte communications. Often on things that we're going to vote on, we are required to let you know if we've had any conversations that could influence our decision outside of this public process. So we just let you know if we've talked with anyone or received any information that could impact our decision. So I'll just go from my left to my right if there's been any such information. None from Councilwoman Moreno, none from myself, none for we've experienced this topic before a few times. So with that, I'm going to open it up to the public. Is there any member of the public wishing to speak to the council on this item or ask a question? Welcome. State your name for the record and ask your question.
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero. I came up with a question. I know that we had a discussion some months ago about the eventual need to replace our current wastewater treatment plant and upgrade that technology because it's outgrown it has no more room to expand, as I understand it, in the space that it has with the technology that we currently use. And there will, of course, be some expense involved in that. And so I'm wondering, in that our lovely, almost lowest in the whole area rates, if we have allowed for started accumulating some of the funds that we'll need for that replacement, so that residents are not hit with a sudden increase in their property taxes in a way that would be challenging and unpleasant for those on fixed incomes. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to staff. I can almost give a wild guess at the answers. I think that's part of why research needs to be done, because we certainly don't want to be charging folks for something that we don't need. And there are a lot of options, and quite frankly, there's a lot of things being decided at the state level that we have to know exactly what is expected before you can cost that out. It's certainly something that will be costed out over many years, so that cost will be spread. And I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but we actually are in a better situation than most every other city. We are not Los Osos with 25-foot lots of sand with saltwater intrusion. We don't have problems that other cities have. And so even though our costs will be going up, other cities' costs are probably going to go up at an higher rate of increase. So we're still going to be better off, but we're all going to be spending more money on such things. Would you add anything, Mr. City Engineer? You got a good guess of what it may well be in the future.
Well, nothing I want to really share right now, just because...
It's a secret?
No, it's not a secret. You know, there's a lot of things that can impact it. One of the things is, you know, obtaining some grant monies for it, because there's a lot of opportunities to get free or low or no interest loans, yeah, for a lot of these improvements. That's one area that is very lucrative as for the cities and, you know, water operators is these grants that are available, because the federal government makes, you know, does this much like the bridges.
And we do want to give our staff a lot of credit. If you look at everything from this building we're in, that's a $30 million building that no local taxpayer money went into because our staff got grants to historic restoration grants. I look at that $500,000 very green parking lot at the lake, a grant our engineering staff got. So I do think it's pretty reasonable to assume we will continue with those kind of efforts, which would certainly mitigate potential cost increases. But we have to plan prudently. There's other things you're working on as well.
Really, really the biggest driver for these cost increases, as you see in Morro Bay, is the infrastructure, you know, to improve. So, you know, finding the best value and the for the long term, the lowest life cycle cost, that's really what we're working towards.
And we've been very fortunate with a fairly sometimes there's value in being unsophisticated. We have a gravity system, and being that we have a large geographical area, we've had these large retention basins that do a lot of processing through evaporation. That's helped keep costs down. And now there's new technology coming along. You may have heard a company that we do business with that bought Chicago Grade Landfill. They have talked to staff about, don't know where this might go, but they're interested in methane gas generation potential. There's lots of things to consider. We are considering absolutely every option, and our staff is already on top of that, and that's what we'll be hearing back. I think we could probably move on unless you have a comment or question. Staff.
I just would like, Rochelle, maybe you could clarify, are we allowed to start gradually escalating fees in the to save for the future increases that we don't know what those are yet?
As you know, our sewer fees have not been increased for some time. That being said, we have been able to accumulate some funds for the infrastructure. It is likely that we will need to do a fee increase in the near future in order to do these. It does require a very specific process that includes notices, lots of public meetings. We're in the process of a fee study to do that. But I would imagine that we will gradually increase. It would not be any large jumps as opposed to a gradual increase.
Right. The answer to the question, though, is we can't just start gradually increasing things without going through this
very elaborate,
I just wanted that to
very
be clear.
Public
okay.
process.
Thank you.
Typical question from a CPA. Glad you're here, Ms. Moreno. And I think I tend to look at the technical side, but that's a very important financial side. Cities are not allowed to make a profit. We can only do cost recovery. So if we don't have an identified cost, and if we have potential to mitigate that cost through other means that we've been successful at in the past, we're not going to raise a bill willy-nilly on our public. We're going to do the research not only from the science end but also from the financial end. So very good. Thank you for that question, because I think it's important for folks to realize how much work goes on behind darn near every question you have. So thank you. I think we have closed public comment. No one else on that. And we have any other action by the council?
I move that we adopt draft resolution placing sewer service charges on the 2018-2019 property tax rolls.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is item public hearing number 2, summary vacation for portions of Mercedes Avenue and Del Rio Avenue right-of-way. Councilman Roberta Fonzi, you have a comment.
Yes, I do. I work for a real estate company at Century 21, and one of the properties that is involved in this vacating of the road has property in escrow with our company. So I need to step down to avoid a conflict of interest.
Thank you. It's always good to have an example now and then of the rules we are under, in that not only do we have to disclose any information we have that impacts our decisions, if there's any conflict of interest, we cannot participate in the decision. And some are so even more restrictive, in that Councilman Fonzi cannot even be with us to add public comment on this item. Sometimes that is allowed. So with that, we'll move ahead with this item. And I believe Public Works Director, who's getting quite a workout this evening, Mr. Nick DeBar, your presentation.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. The abandonment that's requested is actually located between Traffic Way and the railroad tracks. It was originally created with a map of the Atascadero Colony in 1915 around. It's never been constructed, never been improved. Actually, if you see in this exhibit, the Del Rio Avenue looked like it was intended to cross the railroad tracks at one time. That will never happen, because the railroad company will never, they are so against any of these at-grade tracks, and it'll never happen. There's already been portion of this right-of-way that's been abandoned. The right-of-way tonight that's under consideration is in the red shaded area. The yellow shaded area has already been abandoned previously, so you can see there's really no real use for this red shaded right-of-way. And it's also really not needed. There's already a building that's been built on that back parcel, if you can see that next to the railroad tracks. That was actually approved back in the late 1990s. So it's really to clean up these properties, and there's three properties involved with the addresses that are on there. There's a couple conditions for the city to abandon right away. It goes back to the Streets and Highways Code. Basically, it's for a period of 5 consecutive years. It can be abandoned if the right-of-way has not been improved, and if this public agency has not spent any money on it. This is never, we've never spent any money on any of this right away, so we're clear there. The other requirement has to do with the general plan, if it's consistent with the general plan circulation elements. So none of these right-of-ways are needed for the city's general plan circulation element. The Planning Commission actually heard this item, is also recommending that the City Council abandon the right-of-way. So tonight the recommendation is to adopt the draft resolution, finding and determining that the portions of Mercedes Avenue and Del Rio Avenue, that's not Del Rio Road, which a lot of, actually when the first draft that we had actually had somebody corrected it to Del Rio Road, it's actually Del Rio Avenue. So the Mercedes Avenue and Del Rio Avenue rights away adjacent to 5147, 5205 Traffic Way, and 6155 Via Avenue are unnecessary for present or prospective public street purposes in ordering their summary vacation. So with that, I can take any questions you have.
Thank you. Any council questions? And I'll have a question, I think, for our city attorney, just for clarity. And as soon as I get eye contact, and since we are down one council member to begin with and now down a second council member because of a potential conflict, there are three of us. Sometimes you need a higher ratio of votes. I'm assuming you only need two in favor on this, but you know, you all three of us have to agree on this.
And that is not correct. You need three votes.
We need three votes.
Yeah, the government code requires on all resolutions that you have three votes.
So you see how important it is for all of us to get along up here tonight. No one else can have a conflict or get sick. Okay. With that, I'll go ahead and no questions from our council. So we'll open up to the public. Is there anyone that might be considered an applicant or in any way benefiting from this would like to speak first? Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Skip Touchon with Twin Cities Surveying, representing the applicants. We're ready to answer any questions if necessary, but I think it's pretty obvious what's going on here. So,
yes, and we've been through similar things, so we're acquainted somewhat ourselves. So any council questions for this gentleman? Seeing none, any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item, question or comment? Seeing no one rushing forward, we'll close community forum or public comment, bring it back to council for a motion. I'll go ahead and move staff's recommendation.
Second.
I have a motion by Mayor O'Malley, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
It's unanimous. Thank you. Councilman Fonzie, or Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, I might add, you may rejoin us. And we'll move on to management report, C1, elected mayor term ballot measure. So I'm going to go ahead and ask our, let's see, who is giving this report? In the absence of our deputy city manager, Laura Christensen, who is taking leave? Oh, you're invisible. Yeah, did you sneak in on us?
I did.
Okay.
No. I snuck in a little bit ago.
Okay. Make more noise over there.
Okay.
Go ahead and give us your report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. This was brought up at our last meeting to look into and to put forward for the council to discuss the elected mayor's terms of office. So I just kind of wanted to start a little bit with the history of the mayor in Atascadero. From incorporation until 2003, the city followed the government code, which said that a majority of the city council had to vote to determine who would be the mayor and who would be the mayor pro tem for the city. In 2003, the city council passed a resolution where they came up with a rotation method for the selection of the mayor and the mayor pro tem. And then in 2006, they amended that resolution to say that no first-year council member could serve as a mayor. And then in 2009, the city council actually repealed those resolutions and went back to the government code, where it was a majority vote of all of the council members to determine the selection of the mayor and the mayor pro tem. Also at that time, the council determined to, based on the government code says if there's to be an elected mayor in the city, that's something that the council has to put forward to the voters, and then the voters determine whether they would prefer a 2 or 4 year term. So in 2009, the council directed the city to put that forward for the 2010 ballot. So that went forward for the 2010 ballot, and the voters, the majority of the voters, were in favor of an elected mayor to serve a 2 year term. That became effective with the 2012 election. So the first elected mayor took office in 2012. For this ballot measure, and really what we want to look at is whether a 2 year term serves the best interest of the city council and the city itself. But with a 2 year term, you have more of a imbalance when it comes to the electoral imbalance, basically, because you're always, every 2 years, you're having one of your council members running for election. I think what people don't realize sometimes is that the council is made up of 5 members, all with an equal vote. So each council member, including the mayor, carry 20% weight of the vote. And all decisions, like the council, as we just saw in the last action, require a majority of the council. So that mayor's vote carries the same 20% that the other council members carry. And so when you have a 2 year term, you have a council member who's constantly running for election, whereas your other council members who are elected in during that same election don't have to run yet. They're only running on a 4 year. We also have a very wide range of countywide boards and commissions that our council members serve on, and some that are specific that the mayor serves on. And with having a mayor who could potentially change every 2 years, you lose some of that consistent representation. You lose some of that similar voice that you have with the same person, building those relationships and having really that voice of the city in being presented by the same person. And so really with a 4 year, you ensure some of that continuity of representation on those county boards and commissions as well. If the city council chooses to go forward with this, it actually does not become effective until the election in 2020. We do have to wait out that 2 year term. And then just this is what the ballot measure would look like. And then it shall an ordinance be adopted that changes the term of office for the mayor from a 2 year term to a 4 year term. And then as we discussed at the last meeting when we talked about ballot measures, there is a resolution, one, to basically place the measure on the ballot and to have that consolidated with the county's election. And then we have another resolution which would ask for the city council's impartial analysis, basically just explaining what the ballot measure would do, what a yes vote does, what a no vote does, and then allowing, should the council want to, giving the permission to the council to write arguments in favor of that ballot measure. Written arguments are due 14 days from the date that the council makes the determination. So if council decides today, written arguments would be due by July 10th. And then at your last meeting, you did approve a generic resolution allowing rebuttal arguments. So those rebuttal arguments would have 10 days following the date that the arguments came in, which would be July 20th. All arguments have to have the signatures of the authors. So, elections code only allows for 5 authors per argument. And let's see. Again, with elections requirements, we talked about this at the last meeting as well. There's only allowed to be 1 argument in favor, 1 argument opposed, and then with the allowance of rebuttals, 1 rebuttal argument to the opposition and 1 argument in favor. And then can the resolution for the vote by the council. And then we have the fiscal impact. Just we talked about this a little bit with the election that was estimated at 22,000. And we did pass the cannabis ballot measure, which is moving forward. That's estimated at about 16,000, and then putting this ballot measure on would be 2,500. So we'd have a total estimate for our election budget at $40,500. And our recommendations are to approve draft resolution A, placing the ballot measure text relating to the term of office for mayor on the ballot for the general municipal election on November 6, 2018. And that we've already called that by resolution number 2018-051. So this is just saying we're going to consolidate that along with that election we've already called. Approve draft resolution B, setting the priorities for filing written arguments and directing the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis and authorizing the director of administrative services to appropriate $2,500 to general fund reserve monies for the city clerk budget. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Could you go back to the slide that shows the dates of how we changed how we selected a mayor in our city? That's good. And of course, I live through every one of those changes right up here. Well, somewhere like this. What I would like to do is first have, excuse me, council questions of anything staff had to say on this. And then I'd like to give my own take, having served basically under every method shown here. And then if there's additional questions from council, we'll take that. Then we'll go to the public, and then we'll make a decision. And if I read that right earlier, there is four of us here, and all four of us would have to agree to put this on the ballot, because it requires 4/5. And so first, let me see if there's any questions by council members of staff. Go ahead.
Just a question about the ballot measure language. Is that the same language that we put on the ballot in 2010 when we asked about the – we did go for a four-year, didn't we?
In 2010, it was actually three questions. Shall the mayor be elected? Then you had a question, shall the mayor serve a two-year? And a third question, shall the mayor serve a four-year? So it was three ballot measure questions that went forward to the voters. And then the majority came in with having an elected and having it as two-year.
Okay. Thank you.
Other council questions? Go ahead.
If this does move forward to go on the ballot, would the argument in favor, would it be similar with the cannabis tax? What is wrong with my mouth this evening? Where two council members would co-author that argument if we so chose?
Yes, okay. Same as with the ballot measure with that one. You guys can determine who would write that.
Okay. And then while this to me isn't a make it or break it, but I'm just curious, if it does go to 4 years, is there overall a savings if you don't have a mayor on every single ballot? Does it, the fewer offices you have on a ballot, does that reduce the cost to the city in the long run?
The cost for elections is based on the amount of voters and then the amount of candidate statements that move forward. So we do get charged per every time that a candidate statement. So if you have a mayor running who every 2 years who's writing a candidate statement, then that does increase the cost because that's what has to be printed in the ballots every 2 years.
And clearly the cost of the fee that candidates pay for their statement don't remotely cover.
No, it doesn't cover
costs,
all of
right.
the costs.
So there would be some small savings every 4 years. All right, thank you.
Other council questions? Working with a new button up here, sorry. I did want to give a little background on why these changes were made and the experience our city has had with some of these options. And I had just been elected to city council in 2002, shortly after we had an earthquake, which greatly changed how we were doing business, but that was also significant. And how we used to select, again, by state statute, is basically the majority of the council would select the mayor, and make decisions based on a majority, including appointing planning commissioners. It was done by a majority vote. Now, we used to have quite polarized politics in Atascadero, much like you see at the Board of Supervisors, and it tended to be winner-take-all, with majority making decisions of planning commission, mayor, and pretty much everything else. And one challenge with that, that's great for while you're in a majority, but we had pendulum swings often. So you'd have a majority leaning in one direction for a few years and a majority leaning in another direction for another few years. And we were like a yo-yo. You'd see really very little progress on major long-term projects. And with the earthquake coming along, there were certainly some big projects ahead of us, like the restoration of City Hall. One problem, as you noticed, is we had our redevelopment agency, which is really almost how we got everything done in our community, but it required a 4/5 vote to be able to borrow money, to enable to borrow against. It gets complicated, but to make redevelopment work, you needed 4 out of 5 votes. You couldn't get 4 out of 5 votes when you have a 3-2 council and that majority switched year to year. So as a young, not knowing any better council member, suggested this rotation method, and what I proposed is that we rotate mayors based on seniority, and also each council member got to select their own planning commissioner, and then 2 would be at large. So what that did was kind of some pros and cons to that, but what that allowed was a package deal that we got agreement to have the majority of the council agreed. In fact, I think it was unanimous that we would do this rotation, we would do the sharing of the planning commissioners so that there was broader representation on planning, also gave experience for future council members, planning commission experience, and also tied with that, we would approve the redevelopment agency going forward and able to borrow money and make expenditures on darn near everything you see in this town. And so that was the significance of that 2003 rotation. And it was important that I think it was the right decision at that time, though we did learn that there's some challenges. And you see in the 2006, we had I think the assumption was you'd have experienced folks would be on council for a while and then serve as mayor. That didn't necessarily happen, and so the council in 2006 said, you know, not a first-year council member. I think you really need experience to do the job, and that'll become more obvious the things we talk about a little bit later. And then we went back to a majority vote in 2009. We had the ballot measure in 2010, and I was honored to be the first elected mayor, having run unopposed. Didn't happen. The only time it happened for me in my 6 elections, but it was an honor to serve then for our centennial year. And I would say I think it was wise for our community to decide to have an elected mayor, because in the past, you know, I had been appointed mayor a couple of times, 2006, 2010, I recollect, and you'd serve for 1 year. So I'd be on one city selection committee where, in fact, I think twice I was appointed as vice chair, which normally you'd be chair the next time, and I wasn't there. We'd always be starting from square one. I'd serve on a number of regional boards, and you'd kind of get a start, and you wouldn't be there anymore. Now, the problem is when you're on a board like San Luis Council of Governments or on LAFCO, like where Robert is, but basically we are planning 20 years in advance for funding major projects. Now, I'm going to try to convince 12, sometimes 11 other folks to support me doing something for Atascadero sometime in the future. And why would they support me if I'm not going to be there in future years to support them, because not everybody gets everything each year. You are basically seeing on a regional basis what makes sense to do what next. But if you don't have continuity on some of these regional boards, literally, I've served as president of San Luis Council of Governments twice. That's almost unheard of. But I've been there a long time, and I'd say it took 6 years to really understand the complex funding for getting funding for our 41-101 overpass, for many of the things we've had funded in our community. It took some time. The things that Roberta does on LAFCO and some of the water board thing, it takes years to get the experience to have an impact on a regional basis. I never would have been appointed to the Regional Water Quality Control Board by the governor had I not had a track record of these regional board involvement. So I think it's been very helpful to have an elected mayor, for one. At least you're there for 2 years. And if you get reelected like I was three times, you know, I've served as mayor for 8 years out of my 16 years of being on council. And it's right now I'm probably tied. There's two of us that have been around that long. And it does make a difference in making decisions and understanding some of these issues. So I think it's a good idea to have an elected mayor, and I also think it's a good idea to have a four-year mayor, because having campaigning every 2 years potentially, it kind of potentially puts you back in that yo-yo we had before, because every 2 years, three people are up for election. And the reason they don't do that in a lot of other scenarios is you really don't want to have a major change every couple of years. I think I use Arroyo Grande as an example. It was surprising, but sometimes an issue comes up that's controversial. There's a former mayor in Arroyo Grande that was going to be the incoming president for League of California Cities statewide. That's about as much clout as you can get. If you're president of all of the cities in the state, and you can go talk to the governor if you want. You're going to talk to legislators. You're going to have an impact. And yes, that gentleman was very much involved on regional boards. I always said he kind of sucked all the air out of the room when you walked in, like, oh, you know, I want to be able to get something done too. But he didn't get reelected in his city, got a new person in, and it had a difference on the influence that city had. So I think having continuity, right now there's only one four-year mayor in the county, that's Pass Robles. I did have lunch with my lifelong friend Steve Martin. I said, is there any downside risk to a four-year term? And he said, no. Basically, it's all good to have a four-year term, and so I think that is something to consider. Okay, I'll stop there, because I know Roberta's been around a long time, also has seen the value of these regional boards. You've served as mayor here before. What do you think on this one?
This is what I feel strongly about. I think it's very important to have a four-year mayor. Tom, you have stated it very well, the impact on regional boards. If you're rotating in and out with a new person every year, you never get to be chair. You never get to bring home the bacon, really, for Atascadero. And that is so important when it involves funds for roads and highways and annexations and water and other issues. One of the reasons I would definitely support a four-year mayor is running every 2 years is really tough as a council member, and I could speak for someone who's working. That you can do this every 4 years. It's a big amount of work. You don't get paid very much to be on the city council. It's more of a labor of love. But you give up part of your income if you're working for yourself, as I do, and you own your business. The amount of effort you put into your business is the amount that you get back. And when you're running for mayor, those years that you are running, you're going to get less. So it's a very definite deterrent for some people to actually run. I don't think that's a good thing. I think a four-year mayor would level the playing field and make it so it's a more desirable to run for mayor for those who actually are employed. So I would support this.
Other council members liking to weigh in on this topic?
Well, actually, that was something I was thinking about, was that how many people would not want to run for mayor because it is a two-year term, and this would open it up to more people would be willing to on one respect, but the bigger picture is that we all have the same vote, and all five of us have the time. At least the four of us not running on a 2-year term have the ability to run once every 4 years, and then settle in and work. Whereas the mayor has to run and then work for a year and run again and then work for a year. So it does make it difficult for someone to take that position, and not only for the person that wants it now, but someone who may be thinking about it. If it's a 4-year term, that may open up the pool, may make it more time affordable and more attractive to other people to run as well. So we do need to make this a 4-year term. That's something I felt when I first got on council, that because running campaigns is not fun. So let's focus on city work and not focus on the politics.
Other comments by council?
I just do want to say, while we're all kind of saying where we stand on this, we are still opening up for public comment and could certainly be swayed by whatever we may hear. I think, from what Roberta said, yeah, it's been 4 years since I've had to run, and you almost kind of forget. You're like, because you can settle in and work, and you're not concerned about that. In terms of especially the continuity on the boards, especially Tom and Roberta, you two have really been such a strong representation for our city, and without that, I don't think we would have a lot of the things that we have today, whether it's the road funds that we've received, the water benefits, Department of Water, and your work with the Mutual Water Company and the GSA and LAFCO. I mean, just everything has been significant. And to really hit home the point, this was a few years ago, and I was talking to the group of students that comes through on Colony Days, and I asked them all a question. I said, so who is the boss of the city council? And they all came up, some said E.G. Lewis, and others thought it was President Obama, but most of them said the mayor. And I said, no, that's not true. I said, you are the boss of the city council. I kind of talked to them about how that worked. And so really, it is one of five. It is not, there's no extra power that goes to the mayor in terms of votes. So I think that's important for the electorate to understand.
And I think to reminding everyone, we are not deciding a 4-year term versus a 2-year term tonight. We are deciding to put it on the ballot so the voters can decide, do they want a 2-year mayor or a 4-year mayor? And I've heard some arguments opposed to it, and I've held the argument opposed to it at different times, because there's a thought of, what if you get a bad mayor? And I have served under a bad mayor. I've seen bad mayors in other areas, and it's devastating in a community. And what if you get a bad one? Do you want them for 2 years, or do you want them for 4 years? And I remind folks, you know, it's very important who you elect. You really need to not just, well, I like so-and-so, I'm going to vote for them. You know so-and-so. Maybe he or she would be a good mayor, or maybe they wouldn't be. What they do really determines our futures, and we have to be very careful who we select in any elected position. And I think also there's a sense that, you know, if there is a recall process, we did go through a recall process in our community unsuccessfully, but I think if you had a 2-year mayor, you'd probably say, well, we can gut it out. If you got a bad mayor that's going to be around for 4 years, you're going to have a recall, and you're going to deal with that. So I think there is a built-in counter to that issue as well. So I think I would go ahead, and there's no other comment. Actually, I would like to ask the city manager, because I can tell you who suffers the most if you got a bad mayor. What's it like for staff when you got an unpredictable council, or what would you like to say on this topic, Ms. City Manager?
I think, as was alluded to earlier, the more stability that you have in your city council, the more progress that you can make on long-term goals. If you have a council that is constantly changing or a fear of a constantly changing council. Certainly a lot more resources are taken up making those changes and switching and trying to educate or trying to determine and change the direction of the council, and or even educate the mayor. The mayor is a, although it has the same percentage of vote, your mayor does run your meetings and does do a lot of other ceremonial stuff, and it does take some time. So having having the majority of the council up every 2 years is a little bit of a stumbling block for staff, but it's something that we live with. But all things being equal, certainly the more stability, the better.
Thank you. And I think it's important to realize, too, that difference between a campaign every 2 years versus every 4 years, I don't think the average person realizes how stressful going through campaigning is. Now, when I was oblivious to the world of politics, you'd hear something about, gee, if that person did that, they must be kind of be bad, and there must be, if there's smoke, there's fire, or a lot of things go through your mind. When I started running for campaigns, the shocker was that there are some folks who flat out lie. You will be faced with lies, and how do you combat that? How do you, in fact, usually it takes longer for truth to come out. In fact, I can remember years when somebody said, I was going to end up in jail. I've heard that, you know, a number of years when we're going through financing of City Hall and this, that. You're going to go to jail. City manager's going to jail. Everybody's going to go to jail. Okay. Well, what it's like to be on council, not only have I had long conversations with the Fair Political Practices Commission, because folks that tend to say publicly you've done terrible things are also talking to folks like the IRS, the FBI, Fair Political Practices Commission. So I've gone through investigations by Fair Political Practices Commission. Yep, you're okay. Okay, so we got that one resolved. I've been audited by the IRS for over a year, for a three-year period. Cost me $15,000 of my own money for my accounting firm to talk with two CPAs on my business premises, looking through 26 file boxes, answering questions about, well, is there some impropriety between these various campaign checking accounts and your business account and your personal account, and it was great after and this is during a campaign. This is when, during one of my mayoral campaigns, you're going through an IRS audit, questions by Fair Political Practices Commission, and people asking you, well, did you really do this terrible thing? Well, it was so great to get the letter after a year, and the IRS said, no changes needed over a three-year period that they audited. Well, that's great. That means basically that's as good as it gets from the IRS. So, okay, I'm still out $15,000. My family went through torture. We went through a lot of time. That's outside of the campaign process. That's what people go through in a campaign. And if you do that every 2 years, not everybody is going to want to do that very often. In fact, when you usually tell folks the disclosure requirements for a candidate, I don't want to do that. So I think having that kind of pressure every 2 years is tough. Now, I always had the philosophy that, you know, I always thought every campaign, six of them I've had, I thought it would be my last campaign, because I long since decided when I get calls from people saying, I'm never going to vote for you again, or you're a terrible person, or whatever. I said, you know, I'm going to do what I think is best for the community, long-term, big picture. I'm not going to get bogged down in some details. And, you know, I may not get elected sometime. That was okay. But somehow got reelected six times with that philosophy. And I think that's still something. I just share that because it's a lot of pressure. Everyone that runs in a campaign goes through, and if you do that every 2 years, you're just not going to have many people wanting to do that. So I've said my more than enough. If there's any last comments, we're going to open it up to the public because we're going to decide tonight if we're going to put this on the ballot or not. Now you heard more than you wanted to know about what it's like to campaign. I'm going to open up to the public. Anyone wishing to share on this item?
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero. And I have a deep personal and current experience about the challenges of campaigning while managing a business where your own time is the only asset that you have. So I don't speak lightly on the topic. But with due respect to that, I would suggest to the current council that perhaps this measure is premature. The voters specifically chose a two-year term for the mayor over a four-year term. And the mayor has, as the city manager pointed out, a power to shape the dialogue, the exchange with the public, the terms on which things are managed, a variety of issues around the experience of the council's work with the public in a way that has significantly more power than the single individual vote that the mayor has as one of five members of the council. So that mayor position is particularly of high impact. And since the voters specifically chose 2 years rather than four years, the evidence would suggest, since we've only had one mayor that entire period of time, that the risk of rapid fire turnover diminishing our power might perhaps be overstated. Because we certainly haven't had that experience. The incumbency has a lot of power in any election, and certainly locally, it's a really valuable asset. So that tends to keep things stable. And what a two-year term does is honor the voters. Preferences that they expressed the last time this was brought to them, fairly recently, to keep the mayor on a little closer leash so that as you pointed out, the challenges of a bad mayor are very destructive. And a recall election is a very blunt tool. It is a politically vicious tool. It tends to be very disruptive to the dynamics of a body to have that in place, and it threatening that is very disruptive to efforts to have a council move forward with civility and comity to work forward together toward the best interests of the whole community. And so I think that relying on that as a tool or a threat to keep us out of a situation where the mayor might not be a good choice is not a wise decision. And on balance, I would suggest that this is premature, and let's at least try one more way.
Well, I would have to disagree with you, though I do agree with civility. Of course, that's why we were the first council in the county to sign that civility pledge and worked on that because of some of the very problems we had earlier on. But I think the issue with looking at the election, we want to make sure that our community and our citizens have every access to making a decision. That's why we have an election every 2 years. And when we had this election, quite frankly, we went through probably one of the worst periods in our city's history was when they had to make a decision about do we want a two-year term mayor or a four-year term mayor. And I think that was a little fresh on people's mind. And even so, it was a very close vote, as I recall, percentage points between a two-year and a four-year. So I think we've had a chance where I think the council's been it's been what it's been for a number of years. I think we've seen a lot of accomplishments. I think certainly normally you have a chance to vote every 2 years, every 4 years. We're saying, maybe after 6 years, since it was a very close vote, maybe it's time to take a look at that again, and we'll have this public discussion and see where the voters land on this, and I think we will certainly abide by that. I will see we have a few folks ready to speak. First, we'll have Councilwoman Fonzi, followed by Councilwoman Moreno.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate your point of view, Ms. Funk. However, I think putting it before the public for a vote is always helpful. Yes. This will give them the opportunity to state it very clearly to the council, 2 years or four. And I think there's no downside to that, so I will be voting in favor of it.
I would agree with that as well. That it's been 8 years since it has been on the ballot, and as the mayor said, that was coming off 2 years of a very divisive council, and I have a sense that that was probably what was fresh in people's minds. And what I have heard from the community, all sides of the political spectrum, is that the continuity and the way council works together has been so refreshing. And so I think to put something like this to the voters, it is always a good idea to do that. And I don't think that it's premature. 8 years is actually a pretty long period of time in a life cycle of what can happen. So I'm willing to put that on the ballot and see what the voters say.
I didn't see any other members of the public wishing to speak, but I don't want to move on prematurely on this. If there's any other persons wanting to speak on this particular topic. Seeing no one rush forward, we will go ahead and close that. And I think it's been a good discussion. Appreciate your input. And we've all lived it for a number of years. And I think we are ready to vote.
I make a motion that we accept staff's recommendations. Do we have to name the people that are going to write that?
I suggest we do that. If this motion passes, I'll make some suggestions for your approval.
Okay. Well, I make a motion we accept staff's recommendations.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Well, I would like to suggest some potential names for the ballot measure, much like we did with the cannabis, just based on, I think, the mix that we have. I would like to see myself and Council Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi, who both served as mayor, write the support and sign the argument in favor of a four-year term. I do know that Bob Wilkins, who is the first mayor in our city, has agreed and would like to be a signer on that as well. And we would need to be looking for a couple more, and I would suggest that we leave appointing a couple of additional folks to Roberta and I. And then I would say if we're going to have a need for a rebuttal, I would like to see Brian and Charles be the signers on that. Neither of them will be up for re-election, and we kind of, Heather, let you sit this one out, being that you are actually going to be a candidate this go-around. So I would suggest that, and I would propose that as a motion.
I second that.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion on that? I'd ask for a roll call on that.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Really quick, I just want to, in your resolution B that calls for it, if you guys are okay with this motion, we'll add to that section at the bottom like we did on the ballot measure resolution for the cannabis tax and just put those names in for who's going to write the argument in favor.
Yes.
For the council. So it will author, it will say all five, but at the bottom it'll say that Mayor O'Malley and Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi will be the primary authors of that.
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Is there any other need we missed that you need to help remind us of?
No, you're good. We've got it all now. Thank you.
Okay. We got city clerk's blessing. We are in good shape. Well, thank all for listening to that. I did think it was important to kind of document a little bit of background on that for posterity off the top of my head. Anyway, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is marketing update year-end 2017. Oh, but we do need a restroom break, has been called for, so we will have a 5-minute break, and then back to marketing update.
Improvement District that will be presented by Verdem Marketing, and then our city's marketing plan to recap where we've been this year, and then we have questions at the end. So to bring us back 3 years ago, we had the Coraggio Group and the workshops and everything that took place, and this is a refresher on what our goals are as we go into these marketing plans. The tourism is come, sleep, and spend. And then the city's goal is stay, spend, and enjoy. Very completely two separate things. Given that, the target audience for the tourism, there's three personas that the Visit SoCal Countywide Tourism Board has recognized, and that's Mom to the Max, so that's families. And then we have the Active Adventurer, which is your thrill seeker, millennial, if you will. And then your culture class, like your 55 plus. The city's target audience is local and county residents, and any tourists that are here in the area, we want to attract them to our city and have them come see what we have to offer. So without further ado, we will introduce Stephanie Sawyer. She's our marketing and social media specialist for Verdem Marketing, and she is going to give you the tourism marketing plan, which is the Tourism Business Improvement District, and what they did this last year and what they're going to be doing going forward.
Sure. Good evening. There we go. I'm taller than the last person, I think. good evening, Mayor and Council. So nice to be here again. My name is Stephanie Sawyer. I work at Verdem Marketing. We're a partner. We work closely with Terry and with Big Red Marketing, who's here as well. I am going to give us a quick recap of some statistics. I know you have this in your report, so I will go as quickly as possible. The strategic goals, just like Terry just mentioned, for us, we focus on getting visitors from out of the area to come to Atascadero to sleep and spend while they're here. Every month, we report on metrics, the things that we review and that we have been reviewing in the 3 years that we've been working with you have been your website traffic, your social media engagement, your email marketing efforts. We monitor the advertising effectiveness of the campaigns that we run for you. We help with PR placement and mentions, and then we evaluate those star reports in your TOT totals. Looking back on the last fiscal year, I will add that these numbers were pulled through the end of May, so it is 1 month short of a full year. Some statistics on your visitors. I know Terry is also always looking at these. We're always focusing on those new visitors. We love seeing that we have brought over 44,000 new visitors to visit Atascadero.com. We review the traffic sources. Just a quick highlight, the 45% increase that you see from social media. Social media is something that Verdem helps support Visit Atascadero with. We love seeing new visitors come to the website through our social media outreach as well, just so we're trying to get that message across multiple platforms. You will see this reflected in the visitors' cities that they live in. So you see our top location of visitors to Visit Atascadero is Los Angeles, followed by our local Atascadero visitors, and then San Francisco, San Jose, Bakersfield. Those are all cities that are reflective of where we have ads running for Visit Atascadero. Social media engagement, I will go through this quickly, but total impressions of almost 3 million eyes that you see for that total paid and organic impressions. We're very pleased to see Visit Atascadero coming across people's smartphones, through websites, through social media. All of this is in support of getting new visitors aware of Visit Atascadero and acknowledging it as a travel destination that maybe they hadn't considered before. I will speed up. Instagram is another platform we use to reach a bit of a younger audience. Terry mentioned the mom to the max. Certainly we use Instagram to reach those millennial moms. That is the primary focus of the content that we place on Instagram for you. And then Twitter, we still have as a platform for you, although we focus on it much less, just because that audience that we're trying to find for you doesn't spend as much time statistically on Twitter as they do on Instagram and Facebook. Last time we were here, in January, we mentioned that we were making some strategic changes to the approach we were taking with your email marketing. We're happy to see that your open rates have increased over the last 6 months, as well as those click-through rates, which lead to visitatascadero.com. Overall, looking into the next fiscal year, we will continue to focus on increasing those open rates and click-through rates while making sure that we keep those subscribers engaged with quality content that they're interested in reading. Paid media is your advertising, so we run digital ads for you on a platform called TravelSpike, and then also through Facebook and Instagram. These are some statistics for impressions and view-throughs. We were running 15-second videos targeting people based on their interests and their demographics. And then to wrap up, results overall, if we could summarize those quickly for you, or an increase in TOT, I'm sure Terry will go into that a bit more. We love seeing that the social media engagement is up on all platforms. That tells us that the kinds of content that we are sharing is what our audience wants to be seeing. More than 4 million total impressions through all advertising campaigns. We also produced a brand video the end of last year, which won an award in the last 6 months, as well as the Tourism Champion Award from Visits Locale, which we won, and we're incredibly proud of the work that we've done. There is some research. I will fly through this. This is in your report, showing you a bit of the overview of what's going on within Visit California. And then looking ahead, our goals are pretty consistent, increasing heads and beds during off-season and midweek stays at our local hotels, creating dynamic content that is micro-targeted based on persona, and then working effectively with partners to keep Atascadero top of mind. We've made some slight changes to the paid media strategy. We do have advances in technology that happen at a very quick pace, believe it or not, faster than I even meet with you, which is every 6 months. So. We are using some new technology that will help us reach even more people more strategically through some digital ad placement. And then we will certainly, in the year ahead, continue to explore the co-ops that we have available to us through Visits Locale, the CCTC, and through Visit California Partnerships. And then just a quick recap on public relations. In that time, we have focused more on fam tours and partnerships that we have available to us through Visits Locale, more than the traditional just sending a press release to the media. We've been really trying to build relationships on behalf of Visit Atascadero, and our team actually attended IPW, which is the first year that Visit Atascadero has been there. And I had Ashley from the Verdon team, who unfortunately couldn't be here this evening, but when she was there, she was able to meet with 44 different media tour operators and travel planners. So really bringing Visit Atascadero to a new, broader audience, which we are very pleased about. Questions now or questions after?
Here you go. Well, let's go with questions for you while sure. You're here. And one, I do think you've done a very good job representing Verdun. I've always been impressed with Verdun as a company, and I think it's been good to have you on board.
Thank you.
I think for our level, we're just very pleased when we get a good report from our city manager and our deputy director of marketing, because we kind of listen to them. If you said you're wonderful and they said, I don't know, we'd probably say we don't know either. But you've got a good working relationship with our staff. That's very important to all of us. And I think that list of awards has been pretty impressive. And bottom line for us, if you've got TOT increasing relative to anywhere else and we're gaining some market share, even though we are a small player, that's very important to us. So I think that's all good. A couple things you did. Remember, we don't know. We have so many letters we have to remember for, like, slow cog and stuff. So go ahead, and I think it's a good one to talk a little bit. What is FAM? F-A-M. And then go ahead and talk about IPW, because that's something new this last year for us.
Sure. So FAM is short for a familiarization tour, and that's basically a tour of your city where we will coordinate bringing in either media writers. Sometimes we bring in bloggers. Big Red Marketing helps facilitate that a bit with us, and then we also have opportunities that come our way through visits locale and then through some of our own relationships that we have. But we bring folks literally on a tour through your city. They may stay in hotels here. There was a quick photo that we had in the slide deck where we took them on a horseback riding tour, showed them, made a plan for where they would go have dinner. Sometimes they have tours of City Hall. It all depends sort of on what their niche is, and then we provide an itinerary that matches that with the hope that we either build a relationship with them or that they might write a story, that they might come back and write a story. Sometimes there's different strategies behind why we would host a FAM tour. The other question was about IPW. IPW is a huge trade show, essentially, that brings in international tour travel planners. And so Ashley, unfortunately, couldn't be here because she had a family emergency, but she is who attended it. And I would love for her to give more information on what that experience was like. But what that means is that Atascadero as a destination was represented to folks who plan for big group tour travel. So 44 of those travel planners met with her individually, and then she got to pitch them on why Visit Atascadero is a great destination for group travel.
Yeah, well, thank you, and I think that's been important for us because I do think we've just been one of those best-kept secrets. I think it's good when decision-makers and influencers get here, just like the wine speak. We've got folks from the outside here. And I think that has really been helpful. So I think those are good things. We have, Councilwoman Moreno, did you have a question?
Thank you so much for that report. Stephanie, there was a slide a ways back that was on showing traffic from other sites had decreased like almost 60%. And I'm just curious why that might be. That seems like a pretty significant percent. Everything else is up and overall things are up, but just maybe what
sure.
that is related to.
So if you're thinking about that percentage as a 100% total, if one percentage is increasing, then another will by default decrease.
Okay, so that was the percentage, so that was as a whole, these
of
three
the
things, this is a percent, okay.
Correct, so somebody had to go down.
Got
so
it.
Referrals from other sites could be from media resources, it could be reported differently based on how Google Analytics tracks that as well. So
is it's down as a percentage of the whole pie?
Of the whole.
It's not necessarily down from last year. It's down from the whole.
I don't know if Terry can remember.
I mean, it's not critical. That was a big number. Maybe you could come to the podium.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Amanda.
Amanda from Big Red.
So tell us who you are and then give us the answer.
Absolutely. Amanda with Big Red Marketing. So we provide destination management services to the Atascadero tourism efforts. My thought on that might be, so I know that Verdin has been working on ramping up the advertising efforts that drive traffic to the website. Now, advertising is not going to reflect as a referral from another site. It's going to reflect differently. So. Correct, and I would think that your referrals, what we were seeing is when we saw lower website traffic, the referrals you were seeing from like the city of Atascadero webpage to Visit Atascadero would account for a larger percentage. Now that you have a bigger pie, you're going to see that percentage go down. That's going to be my best guess
sure.
on that.
Almost.
Okay.
I can maybe talk about Google Analytics a bit. We will go to the slide that you were mentioning. If you see
yes.
the yellow square where it says traffic from social, that's increased about 45.25%.
Yes.
The opposite of that would be the decrease from other sites. So if those traffic referrals are going up so high from social, which is capturing
the Facebook referrals from the ads that we're sending, it's not capturing Instagram. Instagram counts as a direct referral. These are all just sort of intricacies of Google Analytics, which is unfortunately not a perfect platform.
Okay, so that decrease of 59.77% is as a whole, not that it necessarily decreased from last year by 59.77%.
Right. My memory of the numbers, and again, we pulled these the end of May, but my memory is it was very close, maybe slightly down, but because the advertising is up so high and we've been doing so much on Facebook with paid advertising,
okay. You
see such an increase on there that it has to swing down.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Yes, good question.
And then I just want to say, Terry, you said that the two objectives are totally different. Well, that's not true, because the keyword spend.
Right, except for that last word.
Crosses over between those two.
Exactly.
Thank you, Stephanie.
I'll summarize the website traffic a little bit in my presentation, so that will give you more of a snapshot of where we are. But the advertising and all of the posting and all the things we're doing, both Visit Atascadero and the city, definitely drive, you know, what you're seeing here. So, but it will give you more of a balance.
Thank you. Councilwoman Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi had some questions.
Thank you. When Terry made her presentation, she said we had really three audiences: mom to the max, active adventurer, and cultural class. I'm wondering, when you do your advertising, do you target those? You may go to a different site that does bicycling or Mother's Magazine or senior, or I'm not even sure. How do you determine and target that?
So we do have three different video ads that show talent that represents the audience that we're targeting. So of the three ads, we have one millennial group, we have a family that's enjoying Atascadero, and then we have a couple who is part of the cultured class, we call them, who are enjoying things like the city tour and a more relaxing visit in Atascadero. Those video ads are targeted to folks based on their demographics, which we know through information that we have through the platforms that we use to place those digital ads. So we have information on, believe it or not, like your income, the zip code that you're in, the things that you're interested in, and ads are placed based on those types of information that come to us, and that's the only way that they're getting ads served to them. So we're very specific about what zip codes we target, knowing the types of visitors, where they live, are they within driving distance of Atascadero, and then we target them based on what they might like to do while they're here.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is there one sector that is actually growing faster than another, and we need to tweak our marketing to fit that better?
That's a great question. In terms of who's actually staying in the hotels, I don't know the answer to that question. We do balance all three of those equally based on just 1 month we target millennials, the next month we target families, and we go through that rotation. That seems to keep the information fresh enough so that it's interesting, so that people aren't being overserved ads either. But I would love feedback from our hotels, if there is some, on who is actually showing up at their hotels compared to who it is that we're targeting. Some of those are essentially longer term and shorter term leads that we're trying to get. There are some relationships that we're trying to introduce or, you know, Visit Atascadero to, that may come this year, that we also want to come in 10 years. So keeping that mix balanced has been our strategy, but we certainly have the flexibility to adjust that and respond as needed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, on any technical topic, I've learned to just say, so how are we doing on TOT and some of those big picture things, because that, of course, is what really makes an impact. So marketing folks don't like that particularly, because that's a live or die kind of a number, and there's only one number. And well, are we, you know, doing better on those in-between things? But I think we kind of trust, we need to have enough confidence that you are knowing all of that detail, because if I understand this, we don't need you. I don't understand a lot of what you do as professionals in marketing. I still can't quite figure out why we say we're simply genuine, but we always have staged photos. So I obviously don't understand marketing, but I think you've done a great job. and your particular firm, and I think Big Red too. We've got some good a range of folks that work together. You know, folks that really are do a good job on database management, are managing the database. We didn't used to have that. A lot of why we got a late start was really a complete overhaul of the database engine below all of this, and the interconnectivity and getting the website stuff was painful. And we really have come a long ways in a short time. And again, I was very proud to see us get awards for what you're doing in on multiple different fronts. And we still got increasing TOT. So good job. Any other questions from council? I think we can kind of move. What's next, Terry?
Thank you. That would be
thank
me.
You, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie. A very timely presentation. Thank you very much. All right. So moving forward into our city's plan, we have we're looking at stay, spend, and enjoy. Those are the three things. And when it comes to target audience and demographics, obviously we want to attract the local and our county residents primarily, and then having our tourists come and visit us. So we have something to offer all ages. And as the competition gets a little bit more with events and things that are happening, you do need us to keep this going. So there's that. Let's see here. So in moving forward, we have paid media, which is basically our advertising. That ranges from broadcast with all of our TV channels that we promote on with KSBY, Charter, in the airport with Visitor TV and the local hotels in our county, as well as with our Galaxy Theater, and we're doing quite a bit there. Our radio, we do primarily event marketing, and our outdoor advertising is really specifically our city assets and really promoting our history, our downtown, and our zoo, and then print does the same thing. On the digital front, we have been able to do tremendous ability to target some of this stuff. So with that Tesla picture up there, with Recharge With Us, we can geographically target right around that Tesla sign and serve you up an ad to the left of that that has come visit us and come shop and dine in our city. So we did a lot of that with the Cuesta billboard as well as with our hotels. Our geofencing had phenomenal results, 0.21% click-through rate, which is 0.05 is normal. That's way above it. SanLuisObispo.com with events was a 0.30% click-through rate. That was excellent with events. And then our paid search, which is our search engine marketing, was 4.8%, and that's normally a 4% is average. So all of our things are performing above what our expectations are. As far as earned media, this is the media that we receive with our public relations, all of our press releases, our live interviews, and for Gerald, I had to put a picture of myself in my presentation just so he'd see that. But in this picture is Marston's 101. We have Dead Oak Brewing. We have Bristol's. We have Allen with the zoo. We have Tap at Santa Maria Brewing, along with the Cork Dorks promoting Brew at the Zoo. So we try every opportunity to be on live and do these things to promote different events, and our city specifically is included in that whenever we can. We also do KVEC and KPRL monthly to talk about the different things that we have. So that's all our earned media. On owned media, this is what we own. These are our websites as well as our social media pages. So with our website, if you look at where we are now versus where we started 3 years ago, we're up 32% in page views on a monthly basis, and unique visitors are up 25%. And that's a person that's counted one time in a month. So we have 63,794 of those. That's pretty healthy. And then our top three pages, if you notice on lodging, you can see that Verdun's doing their job, because 31,428 is what our page views were, and that's up 875%. That's phenomenal growth there. Our homepage has declined, but that's normal because people are going right to lodging. They're going right to things to do and events, and that things to do and events are up 25%. So this is a broad summary of all of that, but showing our website analytics overall where we're at website-wise really is a very healthy picture for us. Under our social media, which is a part of what we own, we have our Facebook pages. This just gives you an idea of where the City of Atascadero's Facebook page compares to, like, Visit Atascadero. Charles Paddock Zoo is in the middle of there with followers, about 3,400 followers. But you can kind of see where that goes. City of Atascadero is not going to have a lot of followers, but certainly your Visit Atascadero Facebook page is. And then Instagram, same thing. We started Instagram as a city July 2016, so we've done pretty darn good considering Visit Atascadero's had a lot of push, and they're at about 1,200 followers. You can dive into so much research here. You can find out demographics. You can find out who, you know, where we're lacking, where we need to improve. It's kind of a reflection of the county on demographics for us, but we can pull any information at any time on this stuff to really kind of see where we're at. Other success indicators are attendance results for Tamale Festival. My gosh, we have to expand into downtown now. We have 15,000 people. It was, you know, kind of touch and go on weather as usual in January. 22,000 tamales sold by 2:30. We were sold out. 45 vendors, 27 of them were tamale vendors. So we have a great event on our hands to expand. Brew at the Zoo, the paid attendance was up 2.8%. That's phenomenal for that. Really good event this year, and adding Bear Market Riot to that event. Annual zoo attendance is a little flat. I know weather has a lot to do with that, but overall we're up slightly. And then as far as TOT tax revenues go, obviously people are coming to our town and they're sleeping and they're spending, and it's up every year through the past three sets of fiscal years. So we are doing a great job there. It's highly competitive, as we are feeling from across the county with not only events, but just, you know, stay in general. So we are definitely continually out there putting Atascadero on the map. Another thing that we did this year with the ticketing program, we really tracked our Brew at the Zoo tickets. 38% were out of county that came to Brew at the Zoo. And I thought that was pretty significant, and also a reflection of our marketing efforts on the tourism side. So I felt that was worth pulling into this presentation tonight. The top ticketing site was Visit Atascadero. There was 234 visits, and out of those visits, 71 were converted into buying tickets. The next site was City of Atascadero, followed by the Chamber. And then also we did some fun things. We did a Facebook boost. We had a great click-through rate there. And then that Snapchat filter to your right, that had 143 swipes, and 70% of the people used it on the Friday and Saturday for Brew at the Zoo. So it was a lot of fun to see that, you know, people just automatically go and use their Snapchat and do their Snapchat filters. So a fun, good vibe that event was, and that will continue, and that gave us some good information. Also, our city-sponsored events. We have done quite a bit January through June. We had our Wine Speak Industry Forum. 600 people came in for that. We had Sweetheart Stroll, 144 people. That was up about 40 people year over year. Central Coast Craft Beer Fest, 1,200 people sold out 2 days before the event. Art and Wine Tour is an ongoing event that's been successful. Tent City Marathon, 943 registrants. Runners, I can't talk anymore. And we had about 600, I know, we had about 600 people actually watch. So that was a pretty significant event that's scheduled again for next year for April 7th. Z-Day California had 500 people, and it was rainy weather, so they still did really well. Children's Day in the Park partnered with Earth Day with the zoo, and we had the best attendance in both places that we've had ever. Cider Festival continued to do really well in its third year, and Atascadero Lakeside Wine Festival, as Rochelle said earlier, had a 50% increase in attendance at the zoo versus the year before. So we're just going to keep working on that and getting those events here. So that brings me to this slide, what to expect into 2018-19. On paid media, we're going to increase our digital advertising efforts. We're going to increase the use of videos in promoting our city's assets as well as events. And we're going to update our creative, our signage out there on our panels, and just overall wayfinding sign for the zoo, that kind of thing. The bus backs, we'll have a new bus back coming in. And then owned and earned media will continue boosting posts and maximizing our PR opportunities. And that red panda that you see, that will be our new digital display banner ad that's going to run on Visit SoCal, because Visit SoCal has like the most number one event website in the county, and it's referred to often. So we are going to have an enhanced ad, and then we're going to run some banner ads that will be a 12-month program. Not only that, as far as events, we'll continue to grow our event experience for our signature events. Tamale Festival is a perfect example that we really don't want people to wait in long lines for a tamale. We want them to be able to get lots of different tamales. So we're going to grow the vendors for that. And then just keep improving and keeping our events fresh, where there's always something new to come to. We'll continue our event partnerships. We have our Colony District Committee that's already running out there with a the July 11th downtown sizzle, and then they want to do a back-to-school sizzle on August 8th. They're already going to do Christmas in July, getting all the merchants on board to do a holiday decorating, window decorating contest for November 30th when we launch Light Up the Downtown. So a lot of those different partnerships are real important and key, and we're going to continue to attract key events to our city. So there's always my, there's ideas are welcomed, but I'll skip and go to this because I love this picture. We got Casey's kids because they were our tamale runners this year. I don't know if you all remember that, Chief Bryson's kids up there. And then the kid that won the tamale eating contest, very happy. But anyway, questions are welcome, so.
Very good. Do we have a few council questions? Go ahead. Councilwoman Moreno.
I just want to point out if it's correct that you are again under budget this year.
Yeah. Sponsorship helps that.
Yes.
Sponsorship definitely helps that because yes. I feel if we didn't have the sponsors that we have, it'd be more like 220.
Right.
But that does offset it. So thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Thank you. Yeah. You know, you do a tremendous job, Terry, and so it's just been just a little over 3 years, and to see the things that that we have here and the excitement and the just our residents and the feedback we get about there's so many things to do and there's so much excitement and energy, and it's fun to be a part of, and thank you for all that you and staff and everything do for these. So
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Terry. You've done a great job, as you always have. I want to tell you how much I appreciate your photos, that you have professional quality photos that go onto our website and other places that really add to this. It's not an amateurish thing. It looks very polished. I think it brings people in from LA and other places that are used to seeing high quality, top of the line photos. One of the things that I have appreciated, particularly at the Tamale Festival, is it's kind of a multimedia. There's things going on in various places, but there's music, there's things to see, there's things to eat, and I think there's something to be said for having music at many of our functions, and it kind of draws people in. So looking forward to seeing what happens next year. Thank you.
Okay, that sounds good. And the photos, I do have to give compliments to Verdin Marketing and the Tourism Board and all the work we do to get those photos and get that kind of feel and voice that we want. So thank you.
Other council questions? And I do think one advantage we do have is the partnership between the city and with the Chamber of Commerce and with the Tourism Board. And now I think you look at the Colony District and Friends of the Lake really are two potential areas you can do events, Lake Park Zoo and the downtown. You don't see that cooperation between multiple organizations. They tend to be more in competition, and there's a little competition here, but I think people are working well together. We want to incentivize that and look for continuing to partner. And again, I've said before about when looking at when EVC got involved with looking at marketing, the tourism study, just how we were so underspending in marketing countywide, and I think it's had an impact with Visit Slow. We're very much more aligned as a county, but I do think it is proven that the investment in marketing and promotion has paid off, and I think it's something. Yeah, our city certainly needs to keep in mind that we need to not fall behind and continue to be in a position to partner with the T-Bid. And I think that's been very good where we've had mutual goals where you could say, well, the city could do half, and the T-Bid's more inclined to, well, yeah, we can do half and work together like that. I think that's a good way to go. And I think, did you have anything else? We will go to the public, but I didn't know if you had any other presentation.
That's it for this evening. The Showcase of Cities for the Mid-State Fair is an example of what you were just referring to with where the Tourism Board and the city are partnering on that. And it's exciting because some of that is really more city, but our Tourism Board's like, no, this is both, because we have an opportunity to bring people back after they come to the fair or come be in one of our hotels if you need a room type of thing while you're going to see Luke Bryan or whoever. So thank you.
Very good. And I'm going to invite, I know Big Red can on the drop of a pin have something to say. Would you just tell us a little bit about what Big Red is, who you're working for, and we're talking 3 minutes of, well, what are you about and how do you work with Terry?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, Big Red Marketing, we kind of coined the services that we provide as destination management services. So working very closely both with Terry and Verdin Marketing, and then obviously alongside the board, hoping to bring some perspective, having worked with many destinations, attending many of the educational and industry conferences out there to learn what other pressures are other destinations seeing throughout California and the country, so we can come back here and help this destination stay ahead of the curve, help to collaborate with other organizations, whether that be countywide or statewide organizations, so your dollar can go even further through co-op opportunities. And then really working, hopefully, we know that working with a tourism board such as the TBID here, it can take a lot of time on your city staff. And that's, we really hope to be a resource to help relieve some of that time and stress as best as we can. You know, it's a fun, I always say I wouldn't do anything if it wasn't a challenge because it wouldn't keep me on my toes. So, you know, there are times when we have to look at, sometimes the hotelier's visions and the city's visions do not align completely in step from the first look at it. And we always like to take a look at how can we look at this from other angles and hopefully bring everyone together so we're all moving forward together, because that really is the strong way to move forward.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and open it up to the public. Anyone having a question or comment about the marketing update and new marketing plan? Seeing no one approach, we will close the public comment portion, bring it back, and console the chief about how life is not fair. Now, when Terry's stats go up, she gets credit. If your stats go up, we're saying, Chief, what the heck's the matter with you? So the good news is the chief's stats are going down, and that's a good thing. So having a safe community and both chiefs, we do want to acknowledge that. And you guys give much briefer reports. But Terry, you did an outstanding job. We appreciate that. And though
thank you.
We do... I think we do want to see, I'd like to see more support for this in the future. And I think focusing on expanding sponsorships, I think, is a lot of potential for you. People want to be involved in these things that we are doing. Any other comments? I think we should certainly receive and file this report. And I think it would be good to have an update more. I think actually it's more valuable for us to have a update as part of a little bit of a work session during strategic planning, more so than a council, because we can have a little more interaction. I think that would be more valuable for staff and the council. So we'll move on to the next agenda item, number 3, El Camino Real North and San Anselmo Road East Pavement Rehabilitation Construction Award. And again, I believe that's our city engineer, Mr. Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. We'll wait till Luke cues this up. It's a little project background here. The El Camino Real San Anselmo project has been in progress for a couple years. The El Camino Real, it's about 0.8 miles. PCI currently is 23. This is a section between basically the Kmart entrance and where Kailana is. So it's a terrible part, our worst part of El Camino. It's really confusing lane configurations. If you drive through here, there's places where it's two lanes and goes to one and back to two. There's parking in different areas. It's a little confusing. There's outdated ADA ramps. And we actually, this is like our number one road complaint that we get by far in Public Works. San Anselmo Road East, it's 1 mile long. It's basically from El Camino Real to Del Rio Road, not Avenue. PCI is 71 on that first section from El Camino to Dolores. And then from Dolores to Del Rio, it drops off significantly to 23. And there's several poor drainage areas along this corridor that this project will fix. Oops. So here's a project map showing those sections. El Camino's on the left there, and San Anselmo kind of going to the upper right. So the blue areas are those PCI of 23. Those would be more or less heavy rehab areas. And the heavy rehab that we're proposing to do is cold-in-place recycling. It's the same process and technique that happened on Atascadero Avenue a few years back. It's a very green technology, so there's no trucking involved. It gets milled up, put into a train, as we call it. Emulsion is added, and it's put back down on a mat, rolled, and then a overlay is put on top of it. So those are the blue areas that's proposed, and then the teal area there is going to be a light rehab, so it'd be, I believe, light overlay. So we actually put this project out for bid. We got four bid proposals ranging from just under $1.6 million to just over $1.9 million. The low bid was submitted by Ferravanti Grading and Paving of Paso Robles. The second lowest bid was only $13,619 more, or less than a percent more, so very competitive bidding for this job. If the project is awarded, construction is anticipated to start next month. It has a 60 working day project schedule. Roughly, there's 20 working days a month, so that's 3 months. I don't expect it to take that long, especially with the cold in place recycling. That process actually really knocks down a lot of the working days. And then during the project, we'll provide notices to all the businesses and property owners along the corridor. One of the things I want to back up real quick, some of the striping, what we're proposing to do there is have one through lane each direction, a center two-way left turn lane, much like El Camino has. There's a lot of driveways, businesses throughout there that need to have that access. So we find that will be beneficial, as well as bike lanes on both sides of the road. And then parking, where there's parking now, it'll primarily remain. There's one small section just south of San Benito that will lose parking, but for the most part, all the other parking will remain where it is. And a couple other things. One is there's a part of the project includes 250 feet of a missing link of sidewalk. I call it a missing link. That's not there right now on the, we'll call it the southbound side. And ADA ramps will be updated. So anytime we do major construction like this, we're actually mandated by the state to look at the other pedestrian components and do those updates with the ramps. So the project financials, This project did come in higher than we expected. The top part of that are the proposed funding uses. So currently, we've spent, through design engineering, we're looking to spend just over $200,000. The construction contract, which is a Ferravanti grant or bid, is just $1.591 million there. We expect to have in the testing and oversight inspection and all those other things that the soft costs for construction are anticipated to be about $80,000. There's a contingency that we always have on these projects. We hope not to spend it. We've got a good track record, as I think the Deputy Director of Administrative Services might contest to. We've been doing really well the last few years. But we like to have that in there in case anything comes up. We hope not to spend any of that money, but there's about $240,000 there. So the total estimated cost for the project, considering everything that's been spent to date and what we anticipate to spend with construction contingencies, is $2.122 million. So if we look at the budgeted amounts that we have currently in the current adopted budget, LTF, or local transportation funds, these are funds that can only be used on roadway and other types of improvements, transit, bike and pedestrian. Is just a slight, for El Camino, it's actually only 42,000 at San Anselmo. It makes up the, you know, pays for the entire amount. We also have USHA monies that we're going to be spending on this. This is money we get, you know, through SLOCOG. That's going to $566,000 for El Camino. And then the new gas tax that went into effect last year, the Senate Bill 1. We anticipate using the partial first year and then the first or the second full year allocation on that. So the fiscal year 17-18 amount and then the fiscal year 18-19 amount on that. So they're, so that's $708,000. So we have a shortfall on the project. If you take out the contingency amount, it's about $100,000, just under $100,000. With that contingency, it's $338,600. So what staff is recommending is that we use the local transportation fund reserves to pay for the shortfall or the contingencies. So one other thing I want to talk about with that SB1 money, the $708,000, there's a active campaign to repeal that, and it's going to be on the ballot this November. You know, it's pretty strong feelings on it. A lot of politicians weighing in one way or the other. Tascadero, for that first partial year, we're expecting to get $180,000 plus the second full year, $517,000. So if this does get repealed, we'll have that first full or first partial year. That second full year we'll only have roughly 4 months of, and I anticipated that through October, and I prorated that 517. It totals out to $172,340. So this repeal, if it is repealed, this will create an additional shortfall for the project of $355,739. So something to consider, this SB1 is, we have plans for using that on future projects, as well as, you know, this is one project that we've designated the appropriations towards for the first full 2 years. So having a contingency plan is we're recommending. This is kind of hard to read, but this is a page out of the budget book. It's a CIP. What staff is recommending is that we delay one of the projects that's funded with the LTF funding. In this case, the 2019 pavement resurfacing project, this is on various roadway segments. I listed them in the staff report. But that project is $592,000. So this will cover those shortfalls from that the loss of SB1 monies. Up there on the kind of on the right-hand side is that SB1 amount that we budgeted for, that $708,000. So this is our contingency plan. What we would do is this project would start work this winter. We propose is that we delay this project until this winter. This winter we're going to be looking at updating the capital improvement program, so we'll be looking at updating all these project costs. At that time we'll know the fate of the SB1. We'll also have be able to prioritize and run it through Street Saver. These other projects will have, you know, better data to look at. So kind of just reevaluate some of the CIP for that. As I mentioned, this section of El Camino Real, and really this section of San Anselmo, we get quite a few complaints on El Camino especially. The public is really going to notice when this project is done. They're just going to not believe why we hadn't done it before. So tonight the recommendations, there's four. One, award a construction contract for $1.591 million to Ferravante for the project, and then authorize the city manager to execute a contract with Ferravante in that amount for the project. Also authorize the administrative services director to appropriate an additional $338,600 in local transportation fund balance towards the project. And then lastly, and which we always include, is authorize the director of public works to file a notice of completion with the county recorder upon satisfactory completion of the project. So with that, I can take any questions you may have.
Council questions. Well done presentation, as usual, Mr. City Engineer. Seeing one question from Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
It's not exactly a question, but I got to agree with you that we get the most complaints about this stretch of road by far. And the striping is confusing in places. I'm happy to see the ADA is going through and kind of connecting up the places that need to be fixed. And overall, I think this will be something that will benefit the infrastructure of the entire city.
Yes. Other comments or questions?
Quick comment. Yeah, and I appreciate the looking ahead to the SB1 repeal and having a plan, because this is a very important piece of road to get fixed. It is by far the worst road in Atascadero that I drive on, and I never know quite where to be in the lane. So I appreciate the new striping and bike lanes and all that. So thank you for being proactive.
Seeing other council questions or comments, I'll open up to the public for questions or comments. Seeing none approach, one thumbs up from Ms. Funk in the audience. We'll close public comment and bring it back to council for a motion.
I move staff's recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi, seconded by Councilmember Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. As we move on to council announcements and reports, how much more time do we need for this council meeting, Mr. City Attorney? Would you 15 minutes, half hour?
40? Well, Amanda and I are very close on our estimate, so you take
well,
what time.
Well, we'll just see how it goes here. Okay. Let's go ahead with either a council announcement or a report or a committee report. I'm going to just start from my right, Mike Waimea to the left. Anything you have to say? And we'll see whether staff are applauding or not as we...
Well, I don't have a report, but just to say that the Mayor Winemakers was outstanding. I want to thank the Kiwanis for what they outstanding job in putting it together. And just, it was a wonderful evening, and the wine festival was tremendous. And thank you, Tom, for turning on those big fans on the hill to bring those nice cool breezes down for the wine festival. I appreciate it.
Yes.
No comments, but going through the committees that we sit on, there is a design review committee meeting tomorrow, and we'll be covering an apartment building that's proposed for Traffic Way before you, approximately near the school across the street. There's a vacant lot. And also a 7-acre industrial plot that is down near Via. This is actually going to be a more interesting one. We don't have a lot of industrial. We have to plan this very carefully, so I would invite the public and those who wish to attend.
Thank you. Well, while we have some committee reports to look at, I would suggest, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi, if you would agree, we could probably eliminate the Ad Hoc Animal Shelter Committee.
Yeah, I would agree that Paso Robles has opted out of providing animal control services. So it looks like we're going with the county since we can't do it by ourselves. So we can take that one off the list.
We'll take that one off the list, though I am encouraged by the concerns raised by our two cities. We did reduce costs countywide by over $1 million, and we have a focus now on reducing costs over time rather than planning for escalated costs. So I think we did make some good headway there. And so, yes, I agree. I think we can move forward from there. I will mention that I have spoken to Clint Pierce, who is the chairperson for the Visit Slo for the Marketing Tourism Board. And I had spoken at the last advisory committee meeting for the County Tourism Board that SLOCOG, Council of Governments, and the Regional Transportation Authority has a number of subcommittees on transportation related to seniors. We've looked at how do we maximize services for them and on health and human services. We've never looked at tourism and visitor transportation, and this is a growing concern. It's been in the lodging industry. It also leads to a lot of bottlenecks, and I think the Tourism Board is very much interested in being involved in planning with SLOCOG, as well as how do we develop resources. And it's a good strategic time because we have many new private sector businesses coming into our area to provide transportation services. So I think this is an opportunity, while I am still president of SLOCOG, to pull in the president of the SLO, Visit SLO, and then also our two executive directors, and then the private sector and public sector to look at transportation from a visitor standpoint. And I think this is especially important to us in the North County with the airport in San Luis, and with very likely that our countywide destination event center is going to be in Paso Robles. It's very important to make sure visitors have transportation that can make it right through our community into hotels and right up to various conference centers. So I think that is actually cost effective. Since this would be primarily a private sector solution, we can just aid in planning and make sure that's integrated. So that's some I hope to at least get started while I'm still around. And then hopefully that would be something that SLOCOG and the Tourism Board at the county level would keep an eye on. And other than that, I have nothing else to report on our committees. Councilman Moreno.
EVC meeting tomorrow, and I just want to say, too, went to the ceremony on civility where the seven mayors were there, as well as John Bichong, our first district supervisor, who is chair of the board. Were all present to sign the civility pledge, and I was there, as was Supervisor Arnold and another council member from San Luis Obispo, and a lot of members of the public and community at large were really encouraged by this show of everyone coming together. So nice to be a part of that. And yes, I want to echo just a wonderful weekend, starting out with the chamber mixer at Portola Inn and Mayor's Winemakers. I got to volunteer with the chamber at the wine festival, did a tremendous job. Not me, the chamber. I did an okay job volunteering. It's always fun. I love that event. And then Sunday, I got to go to Galaxy Theater. They're doing flashback cinema, and I saw Dirty Dancing, baby. It was great. Anyway, love this town. Lots to do.
Thank you. I believe there's no other council announcements. Anything from staff? So
it's an exact tie between Amanda and myself.
Then we will adjourn. Thank you.